A63. Number 3B.
So here we have a very important point, you see, where our whole life mission, as somebody said it, that we put our whole life mission into the service of the universe. And therefore, we have to have quite different questions to answer about our being. That we don't say, what do I get out of Christian Science? But it is then a question of how do I put that into the service of the whole universe, into the service of the whole idea. What service is it, what I gain for the whole idea? Not how can I make a go of it for me? How can I make a living out of it? How can I use it to be a big shop? It's always a sense, how do I integrate my mission, my life, my activities, my whole into the whole universe, into the operation of the whole principle, so that I lose a sense of being an egocentric or egotistic identity. You see that demands another concept, because from the historical point of view, you know, if you look back, we are living today in quite a different era. Up to now, man had to fight for his existence, for his survival. Right from the beginning, you know, the cave dwellers right up to the sea dwellers, lake dwellers, I think you call them. And when they settled on the land, it was always how to cultivate the ground and to get enough potatoes out of the ground to eat, and so that it can survive, so that I have enough strength to cultivate the ground again, get some potatoes out of the ground so that I can survive again, and to put some potatoes back into the ground, cultivate the ground and not get back. This has lasted until about, you see, this is a life history until about 20 years ago. Even before World War II, you know, it was fighting for one's survival. Now, little by little, we come into an age that is different, where in the Western world, practically everybody has enough, more than enough. You see, where the main purpose of man is no more, so to say, how can I fight for survival? And in order to fight for survival, I use my elbows. And I just don't care what the other one is doing. I don't care what the other country is doing, how the welfare of the other country. We are approaching a different age. That age which says, I'm here for a whole. My mission is to see my place in a whole. So this is what the fourth day is really saying. As it says, whatever an idea is, whatever that idea is of no avail unless you put it back into a principle, unless you make it as an idea of the whole principle. And naturally there, you can see that if one does that we put it into a harmonious, frictionless universe. Yes, then we come to the fifth day of creation. What is the symbol in the fifth day?
The birds.
The birds. Yes, the birds and the fish. Uh-huh. Are they different in symbolism? Yeah. What do the birds mean? Exalted thought. What do the fish mean? Multiplication. They are two very different symbols. So, again, we come to a day of creation wherein we more or less see that we have to deal with two pillars or two aspects. The one is the birds, exalting thought. The other, multiplication. What does exalting thought mean? That's a very nice religious expression. Exalting thought. What does it mean really for us? What is the metaphysical implication?
Exaltation above the mortal?
It's exaltation above the mortal, which means, how do you do that?
By sticking to the first four.
I don't know. Yeah, by sticking to the first four. And then if you stick to the first four, what happens?
You rise above the mortal. You lay down the mortal because you love the spiritual so much that the mortal fades out.
But the mortal fades out. So you would see that the exalting thought is actually demanding something before that, namely that the mortal fades out, or that you lay down the mortal sense, yes, which you would say that is not a human effort to lay down the mortal, but that it is a constant contemplation of the first, second, third, and fourth day. That through that process of going back always to the divine command, the divine impact, you are steadily losing, really, your mortal concept. And therefore, it lifts you again out of the mortal system of reference. You see, you're at the fourth day, really, the divine system of reference, divine system. Let's say that just the divine system, ideas govern. And so slowly you are lifted out of the limited mortal system of reference. And that appears as exalted, as being exalted above the mortal. Yes? Therefore, again, you see, I think we have to be very clear. Why shouldn't we start with the fifth day? Always ask this question, you see. Why shouldn't we start with the fifth day? Let's say we start with the fifth day. What would you do? And so many people like to start with the fifth day. They like to exalt the thought. They like to go up on cloud nine. They speak about exaltation and a wonderful spiritual lift up. Why don't we start there? It seems to be so natural that we say, well, I know that this mortal plane of living and existence is just no good, so why shouldn't I exalt me above it? I don't want to have it anymore. Let's have the spiritual. What happened? Couldn't we start there?
It would be a religio-mystical lift.
Yes. Why? I'm awful. I always ask why.
There's no scientific basis to begin on, and the scientific basis is achieved by going through 4, 3, 2, and 1. Because there's got to be, the lift has got to be, the exaltation has got to be on the basis of ideas, and not on the basis of just simply personal sense.
Yeah, yeah. So we wouldn't have a base and say, out of what should I be lifted up? You would have to have a distinction, say, now I want to be lifted up above what? Above what? You have no criteria to distinguish what you should be lifted up, or you may lift yourself up above the Christ, or above that which is divine, because you don't like it. And so we lift ourselves, as was said, in a religious way, and may lay down what is right instead of that which is wrong. You have no way of distinguishing from what you should be lifted up. No way of distinguishing. You have to go back to mine and first say, now what is really the divine to which I want to be lifted up? What is it really? And so you have to make clear-cut distinction what is to be laid down and what is not to be laid down. See? And only in this way you really can know what you should lay down. Not everybody. This is not evident that you know what to lay down. This is a great point in Christian Science, you know. I see that more and more, you know, that people want to get rid of a situation which is their blessing. See? So they want to get rid of a blessing, not of the mortal. Because they cannot analyze a situation properly and cannot see that situation is actually the Christ working. They call it animal magnetism at work. And so they said, let's get rid of it. And they want to have a nice spiritual uplift. So they deprive themselves of the blessing. So this is not so evident to the human sense what is really to be given up. What really is that which should be given up? That's not so evident as we think. See, that's just the point. That so many situations are the Christ in operation. But because the human sense doesn't like it, the human sense calls that very situation animal magnetism. And so there is a great yearning. Let's get rid of it. Let's lift ourselves above it. And therefore we miss the boat. Did I make myself clear about this point? You know, it's important. It's important. That's what we see so often in practice, that the case for the patient doesn't seem to be resolved. And divinely, it is resolved. For the patient doesn't seem to be resolved because he expects something else than the divine. Because he doesn't know what the divine is, he expects something human. That which he himself humanly has conceived to be a solution. And so he says, I have made my demonstration when the very demonstration would have been made. We can see we are constantly fooled in every step of those 7 days of creation. Constantly fooled if we are not starting with mind. And have not a clear distinction in spirit the second day. Because we can't see then the true identity of a situation. The third day. So, and therefore we think it operates not in a system of the fourth day, but in a wrong system of animal magnetism. And therefore we want to get rid, in the fifth day, get rid of something which we shouldn't get rid of. That's practical life, as you can see it right through the life of everyone. Yeah? And so this fifth day is an important one again. That says, well, I can only really come to the fifth day through the first 4 days. If I don't go through those 4 days, I don't know what to lay down, and I don't know how to fly above the earth into the open firmament of heaven, into the principle of being. And therefore I would ask that the principle of heaven is operating in a way that is not divinely justified. All right. We have that second symbol in the fifth day, that of multiplication, the fish. How do these two symbols relate? How are they linked? Can you have multiplication without the birds, without exaltation?
As your thought exalts, it automatically multiplies and exalts further and multiplies again.
And multiplies again. Yes? Can you see that as long thought is not above the earth, above limits? Limitation would prevent multiplication, because multiplication means that you don't touch any limits. The moment you run against limits, you can't multiply. So first you have to take off your limits. And only then an idea in the open firmament of heaven is multiplying, because it never runs against limits. So we cannot have fishes without the birds, so to say. Therefore, our life will never be a full life until we have arrived at the birds. Never full life. Can therefore never have fullness of life as long as we cling to earth, to limits of any kind. Therefore, as long as we have not made mind, spirit, soul, principle the basis of our life. Everybody would like fullness of life. I haven't met anybody who didn't say, "I would like fullness of life." Everybody says, "Let's have fullness of life. Let's have supply." It's something innate in the human. It's quite right. Why not have fullness? So why not get fullness? And they start out, "I am going to demonstrate supply." You know, perhaps this is no more so predominant as I remember in the 30s. I remember in those 30s, in the days of the crisis at that time, practically every second patient one had, every second person one was talking with, was saying, "I must make my demonstration about supply." It was always supply, and the journal at the Sentinel was full of articles about supply. Everybody was gathering nice old articles from Mrs. Eddy or their students about supply, supply, supply. Well, how do we get supply? We can't just say life is an infinite source, therefore in life there is infinite supply, that in life there is abundance of being. It's all true, but it's just words. What makes it that we are a source? What is necessary? What are the prerequisites that we are an inexhaustible source? That's the fifth day. We go to the sixth day. What is the biblical symbol in the sixth day? The moving creature? Yeah, that's all, huh? Isn't he a moving creature? It's a bit more, huh? So, again, you would feel that the sixth day brings in perhaps two main symbols. Moving creatures, and then man. Well, what does it mean in terms of metaphysics, the moving creatures?
The form of that principle.
The form.
The wholeness
of it. Yes? The moving creatures? Does she explain it that way? Esther? Reflection?
Reflection.
Yes? Does she say that? About the moving creatures? No, she doesn't. No? What does she say about the moving creatures?
Classification and individualization.
Of what?
Of ideas.
Yes? So that the moving creatures... How does she symbolize those moving creatures? Do you remember what she says? Yes, you have studied the 7 days of creation. That was the assignment for a whole year. What kind of symbols of moving creatures does she take there? Yeah, the the moving creatures he takes there is the lion, and the serpent, and the worm, and the cattle, standing for what? For qualities, for single qualities. And she explains what those single qualities are. It's all right, Judy. She starts out and says that spirit diversifies, classifies, namely bringing out through that diversified qualities. So that a fox has not the same qualities as a dog, and the dog not the same qualities as the cattle, and the cattle not the same qualities as the serpent, and the serpent not the same qualities as a lamb, and the lamb not the same qualities as a lion, symbolically. Because I think you would never take the symbol of a lion to bring out the qualities of a lamb. Wouldn't you? See, we have somehow, what they had to do, they had to take those few known symbols and make the best of it. At that time they couldn't talk in abstract ideas, they only had at their disposal a lot of natural things and history and a bit legends and so on, so they had to use that. So they would never speak about the roaring lamb, and the tender lion, and so on. One had somehow always attributed to these individual moving creatures certain single specific qualities. A dog, a loyal dog, a fox, it's really foxy. Bringing out what? Symbolizing what? That there are a lot of individual qualities in being. That being or the universe constitutes of very definite individual qualities, like courage, like honesty, like perseverance, like meekness, and so on. And these qualities, single qualities, could best be symbolized by animals. They were expressed that in the animals, much more than in the trees and in the flowers, because they expressed qualities. Yes, Judy?
Max, aren't these human-related terms, though, now? I mean, a true, pure spiritual idea wouldn't be courageous or loyal or foxy.
Yeah.
Why now has she come down to the human level and distinguished between human-related qualities?
Yes.
Instead of keeping the idea pure?
Yes, yes. You are quite right. As far as I just can remember now, she only gives positive qualities to everyone, even to the serpent, even to the worm, the tireless worm. You don't like to take a worm in your pocket, I know. And yet, she gives to it a very positive quality. She tries to give only positive quality. You can say, are they human qualities? Well, is tirelessness just a human quality also, or is it also a divine quality? Is courage only a human quality, or is it also a quality that is divine? So I think promptness, perseverance, whatever she says, wise, the serpent is wise. So actually she takes in quite a lot of good, positive qualities. But you could say, why does she take in qualities? Why not just abstract ideas? And that is, I think, the point she wants to bring out between the moving creature and man. When she comes to man, she doesn't symbolize him through human qualities anymore. Meaning, what does she mean? Meaning that the moment you come to man as idea, we know now from our exercise last year of B4 that a quality becomes only then an idea when that quality reflects all other qualities. And that's what she wants to bring out here. The sixth day starts out with the animal and says, there are isolate or single, let's just say single qualities. But the moment, now comes in reflection when you're going to men, but the moment all these qualities reflect each other, they become idea. And therefore man, she says, is the compound idea. In man, all ideas are reflected. Man is not just one single quality, like courage. Absolutely. That's where the dominion comes in. That now each quality reflecting every other quality, it's interesting, we will see that later on, that all the side marks are all about thought, quality of thought. But when you come to man, he's no more thought, it's idea. So we see here how we see that all the qualities of thought, when they are gathered together into one and becomes God's whole image and likeness, then it becomes idea man, the compound idea man. Yes?
The qualities are still a relative thing.
Yes?
And take all those relative qualities like courage and so forth and put them together, and then
you have
the idea.
You're right, Louis. See, the Bible is a picture language, and therefore the Bible must make use of what they have. And it would say, you see, your manhood starts first by bringing out positive qualities. It starts with the qualities of thought, with consciousness. And as these qualities of consciousness are seen clear and clear, you begin to say, but aren't there qualities that are God's own qualities? Namely, let us, God, make man in our image and likeness. So only there you get then man as idea. Because then those God's own so-called qualities are ideas.